All right, the meeting is being recorded and the meeting will come to order. Let's begin with a flag salute. And I even brought the flag again today. So I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. This is Monday, June 22nd, 2020. This is a virtual public meeting of the Zoning Board of the Township of Clinton, County of Hunterdon, State of New Jersey. Adequate notice of this meeting has been given in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act, in that an annual notice was published in the Hunterdon County Democrat, and the notice of an agenda for this meeting was posted on the Township website, bulletin board in front of the municipal building, the front door of the public safety building, and fax to the Hunterdon County Democrat, the Express Times, the Courier News, the Hunterdon Review, and the Star Ledger no later than the Friday prior to the meeting. Okay. Denise, would you call the roll, please? Denise, are you there?
For some reason, that didn't work. Okay.
John Yeager, can you hear me? Yep, there you are.
I think you'll need to unmute Dr. Lewis so she can respond.
She's on her phone. I think she can respond.
Okay.
Can you hear me? This is Lewis.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mattson?
Here.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Here.
Mr. Roberts? Absent. Ms. Stevens? Ms. Stevens?
Sharon, you're on mute. Sharon just texted me, my computer just went down. So we'll give her a minute. I'll ask her, okay. Can you... Tom Yeager, you're on mute. Tom Yeager?
I'm here.
Thank you. Okay. Tom, should we wait for an affirmative from Sharon when she gets back in?
Yeah, while we're waiting for her, maybe this would be an appropriate time to introduce Heidi Rohrbach, who's on the phone with us and will be joining us as a board member probably starting next month. Heidi, you're on. Can you hear me? You want to just say hello?
Yes, hello. Thank you very much. I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve a township, so thanks, everyone.
Okay, welcome. We'll hopefully we'll have you all set up next month.
Great, thanks.
All right, so let's go down the open items. And Heidi, I'm going to mute your line because there's a lot of noise. Denise, there's a lot of noise coming from your line too. So. Next item is new business vouchers. We had a small stack of vouchers, and there were a couple items in there that were cause for question for a couple of people. Sharon Stevens, is that you? Are you back?
No, that was me, Dave Roberts.
Oh, okay. All right, Dave, so Dave, you are on. Dave, can you mute your line, please?
I thought I just did.
Okay. So, Denise, you and I talked earlier today that there are a couple of items which showed in the stack of vouchers, which are actually not funds headed out the door, but there are placeholders. Could you explain that again, please?
Sure. Okay. So, the process for paying vouchers has changed slightly because in the past we weren't doing things quite the way we should. So we need to first increase.
I can't hear you, Denise. So can you just start? I'm sorry. Can you start over? And sorry, I don't know if you're going in and out, but I can't hear you.
Yeah, her line is breaking up.
Okay.
And it looks like we lost Denise. Are you on? So while we're waiting for Denise, let me. Hey, Denise, we're not hearing you very well. We're only hearing every fourth or fifth word. Can you connect on?
There are funds available before the professional starts work. So that is the priority awards. So, for example, a person where on this question, they have $500. It says on it, but it's $1,000. So what we're doing is, can you hear
me? Hey, Denise. Not really. You need to disconnect and maybe call in with a cell phone. Your connection is not good. You're garbled.
Okay. Sharon just joined via phone since my computer went down.
Okay. Sharon.
I'm actually also having a really hard time with the audio. I think there might actually be a WebEx issue. I'm on a gigabit connection. I'm sure it's not my connection.
No, it's not. But you sound perfectly clear to me, Dave. How do I sound?
You were at the moment good, but I was actually shocked that I could respond when Denise called my name for the role because I wasn't sure if I would identify my name. So it's definitely coming and going.
Okay. Stop sharing my screen, see if that saves some bandwidth.
Yeah, I don't know if maybe everyone wants to turn off video, if maybe the additional bandwidth might help.
That might help. Give Denise a minute to come back. We didn't have trouble last
time. Can you hear me?
Yes, it's better.
Okay, and I did turn off my video, Dave. Hopefully that suggestion continues to work.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot better now. Actually, it seems like every time Tom pops back in, he's like, Tom, your video is still on. That it cuts out a little bit, so that might be part of it. Maybe WebEx is just having a bandwidth issue on their end.
I think Tom Yeager's video is still on.
Okay, I just turned it off. Tom Yeager, turn it off.
Okay, should I start again, Tom?
Yes, please.
Okay, so the process, the way that it should be is we need to encompass prior to professionals doing work and issuing invoices. So what we are doing is we are creating, in most cases, blanket purchase orders. That amount is not going to necessarily correspond to the amount of an invoice. The most important thing is that we encumber funds and that the date of the blanket purchase order is prior to invoices. So, for example, that $4,500 purchase order, there were a number of that are going to be paid from that. No one is going to receive a check in the amount of $4,500. It's basically just the placeholder for invoices that are going to come and be paid from that account. Does that make sense to everyone?
It doesn't make sense to me. Can you just say it one more time, because again, you were going a little bit in and out for me, so if you could just say it, and I apologize, just kind of one more time for me.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
Thank you.
So the state requires us to encumber funds prior to any vendor. Is that it on my end?
I didn't hear static.
I think it's coming from Tom because Tom Caffrey, because every time it happens, it goes back to your non-video.
I think it's from my line. Okay. I'm going to hang up this line and call in from my cell phone.
Okay. We've never had this much trouble before.
Hopefully we don't have anybody from the public trying to get in tonight.
No, we don't. The meeting is unlocked. We'll see if someone else joins.
Do we have any applicants or are there attorneys waiting to hear what we're doing to the resolution?
No, anyone else?
I'm back.
The resolutions that are being adopted, the applicants were in agreement with, so there aren't any professionals other than our own, other than Katie, expected. Okay, Tom, you're back. McCaffrey?
I am back. Right, can you get it up this way?
Okay. It's good on my end.
Okay. So
basically,
did you finish your explanation on the vouchers? Are we ready?
No. No. Okay. So the blanket purchase order, regardless of the amount is never going to correspond exactly to the amount of the vouchers. The most important thing is that we create a blanket purchase order in advance so that that date, the goal is for the date of the blanket purchase order to be prior to the date of the vendor invoices. So that's basically so the CFO has to certify that funds are available. So professionals should not be doing work on an application without me knowing first. So as soon as an application is started, I will be creating blanket purchase orders to encumber the escrow funds, and then professional invoices will be dated after that fact.
Hey, Denise, could I try?
More understandable, Katie?
I believe so, yes. If John or I have questions, I'm sure he just asked, he wanted to understand it also. So if he has a question after I explain that to him, I'm sure he can follow up with you. But I think I understand it, yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Denise, could I try to explain it the way I explained it to you today? That
sure.
When we get the vouchers, there are two different kind of vouchers in the pile. And you said you could just mute your phone for a second, please. So one set of vouchers represent money that we're actually sending out the door because a professional has billed this. And the other represent money that we're just earmarking to be paid at some future date. And the reason it's confusing is because both of those kind are in the same pile and they look the same. So when you look through, you have to make a determination. Is this money that's going out the door to John Drill to pay his professional fees or Matt McDonald or Bosenberg? Or is this one of the other kind of vouchers that's just representing money that we're setting aside now but not actually sending out the door? And once you realize there's two different things in the pile and they're not the same, then at least for me it was easy to understand, oh, some of these are money going out the door. Some of them are just earmarked. There were two that were just earmarked. One is for Borough of Highbridge, and one is for John Drill. And those were in round dollar amounts. All the others represent we're actually paying bills, sending money out the door. Does that help?
This is Cheryl. So then when we vote on them or we approve them or accept them, we're – because I was looking at these vouchers, and this was the first time I really had trouble figuring out what was what. We're kind of relying on someone else kind of verifying that these are set aside, but they're okay, and we're just going to vote on them. I'm not sure what we're approving or voting on.
When I look at the vouchers, and I say, yeah, I see someone is billing us for a case, and the case is listed as Smeltzer, and I know that we work on Smeltzer, so that's reasonable. And the amount is in, maybe low hundreds of dollars. That seems reasonable. And then I say it's okay. If I see an invoice and it doesn't match the name of any case that we've seen, I ask a question, or if it's for an amount that looks unusual, it's thousands of dollars for a residential case, then I would ask questions. That's what I look for.
Okay.
Yes. If I could also add something to that, the amount that's being paid at each meeting that the board is authorizing is the amount of the professional's invoice, not necessarily the amount of the purchase order. It's the amount of the invoice that is being paid.
So the amount that's being earmarked ahead of time is not necessarily what's going to be paid, because the actual amount will come after, correct?
Exactly. There's no way to know in advance when we receive an application how much each professional is going to bill.
So is the purchase order then an estimate or an approval of the top amount of charges the professional can bill to the activity?
So in that particular case for the borough of Highbridge, that is the total amount of escrow that they posted with the application. So basically, I just earmarked the whole amount, and it can be paid to whatever professional.
What happens if for some reason there is, so to that follow-up, to follow up that question that was just asked, what happens if, you know, the actual amount goes over the earmark amount?
The earmark amount really is irrelevant.
Okay.
It doesn't mean anything, and very often it does go over that amount, but part of my job in managing the escrows is when I see the balance getting low, I go to the professionals, and I do this with John on a regular basis. I see that we're down to $300 or $500 in an escrow account, and I know that John is still working on the final resolution. So I will ask him to give me an estimate of his time, and then I go back to the applicant, and I say, we need another deposit in the amount of X dollars. So, again, the amount on the purchase order, on the blanket purchase order, is irrelevant. The amount that the board members want to look at is the amount of each invoice. That's what's going to be paid.
Denise, this is Dan again. I think I understand your process, but my question would be, why do we need to see the purchase order when what we really need to approve would be the invoicing or the actual dollar amount being expended?
Well, we could do away with that, and Tom, this may be something you want to think about. The reason that the purchase order needs to be seen is the board chairman is the designee to sign that purchase order. So the signatures on the purchase order are the vendor, the professional being paid, myself, that I'm reviewing that this professional did this work for this application, the CFO, and the board chairman.
But normally, Dan, again, we're not approving as a body the purchase order amount. Our responsibility is to approve the amount or the dollar amount paid versus the invoice. Am I correct?
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. So, Tom, would that maybe be easier that I just present you with the hard copies of the purchase orders?
Okay, yeah, we could do that. So it would be less confusing, I'm assuming.
So this is Sharon. I have an additional question. There's an example in here for Christie for $221.52. And I think it is an invoice, but I don't remember, and maybe I'm just forgetful, hearing anything about Kirstie. There was another one about United Paint that I saw in here. So have we heard those?
Okay, so
what do I do with those?
You haven't. Those are new applications that haven't made it to the board yet. So the Kirstie application, that we did a completeness review, Kathy Marcelli and I. The application was deemed incomplete, so we're waiting for the applicant to resubmit.
Okay, but how can we vote on that? How can we vote that they're accurate or not if we don't know anything about them? We haven't heard the case. We don't know of the case. Like, how do we vote?
Good point, but That's a very good point, but we've been doing it that way for years.
Well, let me butt in here. We don't know really that it's accurate. What we're certifying is that we had such a project going, and that the professional gave us proper information the day that the service was performed, the nature of the service, number of hours to the nearest quarter hour, I think it is, a few things like that. And that the bill has been submitted, a copy of the invoice has been submitted to the applicant. If the applicant feels he's being overcharged, then he has an appeal process. We're not certifying, although I suppose if we looked at something and really seemed out of line, we might question it. But we're not certifying that the invoice is accurate as to the charges to the applicant. That's up to the professional, and there's a method of disputing those that we as a board don't get involved in.
And John, Dan McKernan again. I think that from my experience on this board and also on the planning board, we're kind of relying on the chairman and also Denise to assure us that these are appropriate amounts that are being billed or invoiced, and that there are monies to pay those, and that we're just authorizing within that they are accurate numbers and that they're approvable.
Yeah, Sharon, this is Tom. To answer your question, if I see one in there that I don't recognize, then I ask Denise, what is this for? And if she says to me it's one that's in the pipeline and just hasn't come to public hearing yet, then I accept that and I sign it and move on.
Okay, so we're just signing that we believe you and Denise and everybody. So it's more of an acknowledgement, I guess, that the bill is coming, because we can't really validate any events, we can't validate the hours, we can't validate anything. So I'm at a loss as to what we're really doing. And I've had this struggle before, and we've had long conversations with John about it. And what I recall is if you didn't hear the case, you really shouldn't be approving the voucher. So that's why I'm wondering why we're approving vouchers that haven't even come across yet. We would have no idea. I don't know it exists.
What would we do then in a case where an application never made it to public hearing? If we had our engineer review it for completeness, so we have to pay her for her time, and then for some reason the applicant withdrew the application, we would still have to invoice and pay it even though we didn't have a public hearing. What would we do in that case?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking all these questions. I find it very difficult to approve anything that I know nothing about. Like what is the value of me saying I agree or disagree? Because I don't know anything about it. I've not heard anything. I've not seen anything.
It is not required for the board to approve those. I guess the chairman has to sign it. But again, what he's doing is he's certifying that there is such a that it's in the proper form, and that there is indeed such an application, and his knowledge, certain professionals have been working on it, but he's not certifying that John Drill actually spent 103 hours writing his last resolution.
Mm-hmm.
He's certifying that the resolution was done, or that you know, right. that he's received proper billing for.
But we're not even doing that, though. I mean, yeah, I agree that Tom is going to go and validate, you know, something's in the pipeline and, you know, yes, this is coming. John has worked on it or Kathy Maselli has worked on it. But we've not talked to anybody, so we're just concurring that Tom, you know, that we believe Tom. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't understand the value of our approval because we don't know anything. We can't approve anything because we don't know anything other than what Tom's telling us. It's hearsay. You know, not that I don't believe anything Tom says. I believe everything Tom says. But that aside, I don't understand the value of my approval or not.
Well,
other than where
there is some value in you having access to see what the bills are. I mean, if you're interested in whether the applicants are getting a fair shake or, you know, how whether our escrow, whether our professionals are getting too heavy-handed,
mm-hmm.
you know, over the years, form a violation of that. We can't certify on a specific basis, perhaps.
Hey, John, question for you.
Okay, so it's an acknowledgement.
I seem to recall that at a prior meeting a couple of years ago, we had this debate. And I think at the time, John Drill told us, we don't need the board to vote on the vouchers. We could take that off the agenda altogether. And at that time, we discussed it. And I think people sort of generally believed that there was value in looking at them and having some acknowledgement on the record. If people looked at it and there were no questions. But if people are uncomfortable, I believe, and we could ask Katie to go back and check this, we could take it off the agenda altogether. You recall that, John?
Yes, and I'm sure it was that way at least some of the time when I was chairman.
So,
I agree. I recall
so
that.
They say it's acknowledgement.
This is Tom Yeager. Denise, whenever an applicant comes in with a new application, such as what you just said, we haven't seen these two applications that Sharon just asked about, don't they also post an application fee as well as an escrow fee up front that would cover these charges that we're talking about right now, even though we haven't seen the application or heard it?
Yes, they do post an application fee, but that is a fee that goes to the township for processing. That is not escrow, and so escrow charges cannot be paid out of that.
But do they post an escrow fee with their application?
Yes, and that's where these funds are being paid, out of that escrow.
Right. Right, so there is money there available. We just have not seen the application yet.
Correct. And the only in 99% of the cases, the only professional that would be invoicing prior to the board hearing an application would be Kathy Maselli because she and I do completeness determinations.
Okay, thank you.
No one else does anything on the application until the application is deemed complete.
Just to clarify also, I just texted with John to confirm, and he recalls the discussion, recalls the discussion, and your recollection is correct that if you do not wish for it to be on the agenda, it does not have to be on the agenda. It's up to you whether or not you want the issue to be on the agenda in terms of your review. But as you mentioned, it might give you further insight to have it on the agenda rather than less insight, even though understanding that there may be some additional information that you want to get behind the application once you see the voucher, you know, not to make it, you know, you don't have the information. So it's up to you. But in his opinion, so I just clarified with him, he recalls the conversation, and that was his recollection as well.
Also, another thing, getting back to the completeness review, if you look at the invoices, all the invoices state what the time is for. So on Kathy Maselli's invoice for the Kirchie application in this case, it says completeness review. So if it's for the completeness review, that's telling you right there that it's a new application that is getting ready to come before the board.
This is Sharon. I guess what I'm struggling with is I think we call it approval, and really it's acknowledgement. We're just acknowledging that these fees are coming and acknowledging that we're aware of what the amounts are and what they're for. We're not approving anything because we don't really have the ability to approve that amount's correct or not correct, right? I mean, and that's what I'm hearing from everybody's description of what we're doing. We're acknowledging.
This is John. We can certainly certify whether the invoice is in the proper form, whether it gives the proper types of information. And that used to be a problem at one time. I think all the professionals now are pretty much on board on how it has to be done. Although if we get a new professional, we may have to.
This is Dan McTiernan. I'm kind of with Sharon on this, is that for the most part, it seems that it's nice to see some information as to the process or the expenditures being made and where. But the reality of it is, and I did 3 years on the planning board, I almost feel like it's a rubber stamp that I'm agreeing with the chairman and I'm agreeing with Denise that the charges are appropriate. But I don't really feel that in any of the expenditures that I've looked at in roughly 5 years, other than maybe three or four, that I've been able to really ask a quality question or challenge or really know anything about the expenditure itself.
Here's a suggestion. How about if we do this? How about if we leave the item on the agenda for vouchers and we just won't ask for a vote? Instead, we'll take a minute at this point in the agenda and stop and ask, is there anyone that has any questions or comments about the vouchers this month? And if there are any questions, people can ask and we can have discussion about either general policy or individual vouchers. And if there are no questions, then we'll just move on. And then the people that are required to sign the vouchers, including me and Denise, will go ahead and do that. Sharon, would that?
I like that. This is Sharon. I like that idea very much.
Okay. Dan, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I would agree with that also. Then if we have a question, we can ask it. If not, then we know it's going to be approved.
Okay. John Mattson, you have any comments to that suggestion?
That's fine.
Okay. Okay, then. Item E on the agenda, vouchers. Are there any questions about the vouchers this month? Any questions or comments?
This is Sharon. No additional questions or comments.
All right, great. Good discussion. I think it was good to air this out. I think it was worth the time we spent. Thanks for all the comments. All right, given that, I didn't have any questions other than the ones I already asked Denise, and I will be signing all of those vouchers. Okay, moving on. Item F, the meeting minutes from April 27th, which were distributed. Eligible members to vote are Mattson, McCaffrey, Pfeffer, Roberts, Stevens, and Yeager. Denise, did you get any questions or corrections to the minutes?
I did not.
Okay. Could I have a motion to approve those minutes, please?
Mattson, yes.
Okay. So in a second.
Yeager, second.
Okay, and Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Mattson?
Yes.
Mr. Mattson?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Mr. Roberts?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Okay, great. Thank you. Moving on to resolutions. Borough of Highbridge Well Pump and Treatment Facility is resolution 2020-02, and Katie, we are looking at version 3, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, does anyone else have any comments or corrections on this resolution? Okay, hearing none, could I have a motion to adopt the resolution, please?
This is Sharon. I'll make a motion to
adopt. This is David. Second.
So that was Sharon Stevens made the motion and David.
Yes.
Sharon made the motion and David seconded, correct?
Yes, I believe
so. Denise, could you call the roll, please?
Mr. Mattson?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. Cooper?
Yes.
Mr. Roberts?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next, we have a resolution for Joseph Smeltzer and Ronta version 4. There were some modifications made to the conditions today based on some concerns that were raised. And John Mattson, could you please, for the record, go over what the concerns were and how these conditions will address them?
Well, at first I was thinking that we were over-conditioning the application, so I was looking at it. But I talked to John Drill about it, and the way that things work is the township does not actually go out in the field and make a measurement of where the building was located until the applicant comes in for a certificate of occupancy. Now, if he has messed up somehow, that's very expensive for him, because he won't get his certificate of occupancy immediately, and maybe he has to reduce his plans. Maybe he has to saw off a deck. We've had both those occasions happen. And
just a clarifying question. The township doesn't actually send a surveyor to verify the location, does it?
I'm sorry, who sends him?
I'm saying the township doesn't actually send a surveyor to verify, does it? I assume that we just went along with, and like most other zoning things, unless there was a complaint.
Well, Mike Wright goes out and takes a look at it. And if he sees no problem, he'll just approve it. If it looks like it's pretty close to the property line, or if he's given a specific setback that he has to obey, Mike will get out there with a tape measure, and I think he tapes from anything that is shown on the location survey to see whether the corners of the building are where they're supposed to be. And if he finds they're not far enough away from the side yards, he won't give a building permit. It's up to the applicant to make sure when he breaks ground that he's putting it in the right place. I mean, that's his own problem. We, our building inspector, will go out once it's built, and he'll quite possibly, and particularly in cases of a variance, he'll make sure that it is indeed within the conditions set forth on the variance. And he does that by looking at I think in most cases, at least, looking at a location survey, So what we're doing in having these conditions actually is just making sure that the applicant is not shooting himself in the foot by skimping on the plans he submitted or something like that.
So in essence,
answer your question.
Yeah. So in essence, the two conditions that were added were have a surveyor come out as a condition precedent to the zoning permit and then provide an as-built survey prior to getting a CO. So those were the two conditions that were added today to hopefully alleviate any concern that the board had, but also, I mean, hopefully, I mean, although at an expense to the applicant, I would think, you know, that would ensure that there's no confusion and for the applicant as to where it ultimately has to be placed, and then no issue in terms of having to return to the board if it were placed in the wrong place. So there's multifaceted reasons why the conditions were imposed.
It is an expense, but it's less expensive than putting the garage where it doesn't belong and then having to clean it up after the fact.
Right. So right. The conditions are there to address concerns of the board, but I agree with you, Tom, to avoid any repercussions that would have to come afterwards.
David, did that answer your question to satisfaction?
I don't know.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yes.
That's fine. Better?
Much.
Okay. I was saying, I don't know how great I feel about adding those conditions to this applicant. I mean, I know that when he applied before us, he was a little bit wishy-washy about the positioning and stuff, but other than giving him a stern warning, I mean, I feel like this is a condition, we're imposing it and we're saying it's like for his own good, but if we do this for him, we should be doing it for other applicants as well. It should be a standard thing that we require a survey and then an as-built, or I don't think we should be doing that for one applicant.
Well, the reason that came, this is Mattson talking, the reason it came up here was because he was actually verbally changing what was shown on a professional engineer's drawing. So...
Yeah, but we gave him, you know, we gave him a specific relief, and we made it very clear to him that if it didn't match, I mean, we made it abundantly clear that if it didn't match, that, you know, that he would end up having a major issue because of the fact that it did not match the relief that he was granted. So I get it. It would be in his best interest to do this, but I also don't feel good about requiring it of him, but not of other people.
Hey, David, this is Tom. I would give you two comments on this. Hey, Katie, could you just take a run at this? Number one,
I think that was somebody else. That was Sharon coming.
Okay, sorry. Two comments. Number one, he agreed to the conditions. And number two, the reason why I think maybe it applies in this case and not in every case is because he did not come in with accurate drawings that matched his testimony. If someone came in and they had a professional survey with a garage that was accurately drawn and shown to all the setbacks, I would feel less a need to do this in this case here. So to me, that's what sets him apart. He didn't have a complete story coming in. I'll let others speak.
Okay. I mean, you know what? If he agreed to the condition, I don't care that much. You know, if he's happy, I'm happy.
This is Tom Yeager. I also agree that, you know, having the final as-built survey completed would confirm where that building is located, where the garage is located. In my past career, we would do a foundation location, such as what we're requesting, and also a final location survey for someone to get a CO on their building that they put in. So it's not unheard of, and it's quite common. It just depends upon a little bit more as to maybe someone is putting a garage behind their house or close to a side yard, something that is easily measured, let's say from a side yard, from a stone row, something that's easily seen, and you can set it back far enough. In this case, such as Tom McCaffrey was just saying, there was so much information that based on, I'm not quite sure, other than the edge of a road. The edge of a road could change. They could widen it, they could narrow it, whatever. The county could do whatever on that road. So I think in this case, having both the stakeout before building and the as-built after, just so it doesn't get moved, and he did agree, I would go along with this resolution as written.
Yeah, especially with the agreement, I don't have any objection. And I do agree. I mean, look, if it were me building that project, I would have absolutely, I mean, I would have done it beforehand as well, but I absolutely would do an as-built after, and I absolutely would do. So, I agree on the best practice in general. So if he agreed, I don't care. It's fine.
Okay. This is John.
Go ahead, John.
I was actually looking very carefully at the drawings he submitted, and they were updated by a professional engineer in February. And when I actually scaled them off, when I compared the measured the stated dimensions against the graphic scale at the bottom of the drawing, the drawing actually shows he's got about a 44-foot front yard in front of where he's got the building drawn.
I think I mentioned that during the meeting. One of the lines was measured according to scale differently than the marking.
And,
only one of them, which I thought was incredibly strange.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, I guess I pulled us into the weeds a little bit there. But, I mean, if we have a resolution that the applicant agrees to, then I have no objection. I guess let's get back on course.
Okay. It's a good question, David. That's why we talked about this, and I think it's fair. And I think it's a legitimate point to ask about setting precedent. Yeah, it's important to consider. So thanks for the comment. Does anyone else have any comments or – John, I think you covered everything that you wanted to for the record, correct?
Yes.
Okay, thanks for that. Okay, motion to adopt this resolution, please.
Dave Roberts.
Yes, I heard John Matz move. Dave Roberts, was that a second?
Cheryl Lewis, okay. I'll second.
Okay, so Mattson for motion and Cheryl Lewis for a second. Denise, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, I'd just like to confirm that because I was hearing multiple. Or Sharon for the second.
I heard John Mattson for the motion and Cheryl Lewis for the second is what I heard.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. Mattson?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer?
Yes.
Mr. Roberts?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
And Mr. Yeager?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Okay, thank you. And then the last item we have is dismissal of application without prejudice for Joe Serrani. And Denise, could you walk us through this one, please?
Okay, so this is an application that was submitted in February of 2019. The application was deemed incomplete. The applicant never resubmitted any paperwork, and it got to the point, if we get to the point, I had spoken to John about it, where it's, you know, like a year and they haven't submitted, we dismiss the application without prejudice. It's being done a little bit later due to COVID, and it was just kind of over, I had overlooked the application for quite a while because it was just dormant for such a long time. So basically, at this point, it's just housekeeping to dismiss the application without prejudice so that the applicant can reapply in the future if they so desire.
Okay, thanks. Anyone have any questions on this? Okay, motion to dismiss without prejudice, please.
So moved. This is David Pfeffer.
Motion.
Okay, and the second.
I'll second. This is Sharon.
Okay. And since we have everyone here, Dan McTiernan cannot vote on this one, correct? Because he's in alternate position and everyone else is here?
Yes, but Tom Yeager, I believe, is recusing.
Denise?
Tom Yeager is recusing. Can you hear me?
That's right, Tom Yeager. Yeah, can you? Tom Yeager refused himself on this. And Tom Yeager.
Tom Yeager is recusing. Dan McTiernan would be eligible to vote.
Yeah, right. Thanks for clarifying. And you should note for the record that Tom Yeager has left the meeting. He's no longer on the bridge. He was not here when we had the conversation. Okay. Denise, could you call the roll, please?
I didn't get the motion and the second.
It was moved by David Pfeffer and second by Sharon Stevens.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so then Dr. Lewis?
Yes.
Mr. Mattson?
Yes.
Mr. McCaffrey?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mr. Pfeffer? Mr. Roberts?
Yes.
And Stevens?
Yes.
The motion carries.
Okay, great. Thanks. So that's all for this meeting. Denise, what do we have on the docket for next month?
Have anything yet? We have two applications that are currently incomplete. So it's a matter of whether or not they send in their resubmissions and are deemed complete in time for the next meeting. So we do have a couple in the pipeline, but they're just not ready yet.
And are they commercial or residential?
One is commercial slash residential because it is a farm and a residence, and the other is residential.
Okay, great, thank you.
The other one is the Kirchi application, the one that we had discussion about the invoice.
Yeah, okay. Okay, anyone else have anything they want to add for the good of the cause?
Yeah, I wanted to add just one thing briefly, that everybody here, I think, worked with Steve Balzano on the affordable housing project a few years ago. And I wanted to let you know he passed away last week.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Was that unexpected?
Yes. He had contracted West Nile virus a couple years ago and was having a lot of difficulty, but he was not expected. He had been in and out of the hospital a lot, and I don't know that they have yet even specified an actual cause of death. So it was unexpected. He was only 64 years old, so it's pretty unexpected.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Anything else? Okay, if not, could I have a motion to adjourn, please?
I'll make
so
the
moved, Sharon.
Second, David Pfeffer.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Can I just ask who made the motion? I didn't hear a name.
Sharon did.
Sharon.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Sharon Stevens made the motion.
Thank you.
And David seconded.
Yes.
And we're all voted. And that's the meeting. Thank you, everyone, and hopefully we'll see you all next month. I hope we'll be up and running next month.
Have a great month.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks.